let's show success.
Welcome
to the most allergic show on television. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's all about swine flu and avian flu and whatever flu that they've concocted up this for, and terrorism and various other false left-right debacles that'll certainly teach you absolutely nothing and make you make YouTube videos talking about how dumb conspiracy theorists are and repeat the words, you know, and the words, like, very often indeed, and accuse all the conspiracy theorists of being stupid. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide, because in the world so full of chaos and friggin' madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go nuts. I have a very special guest today. In fact, I have a very special guest every day. In fact, it's a good reminder, ladies and gentlemen, tune into the show every day, because seriously, you've been missing something. Today, those of you who are missing out, I feel sorry for you, because I haven't missed out. In fact, this is my second helping within a week of this character, Tom Brown, from tombrown.org. The website hasn't been updated for quite a while, but there's plenty of decent info up there. And also, if you go to guerrillamedia.co.nz, you can indeed see the presentation he just gave last week at the Uncensored Conference. Tom Brown, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Vinny. Nice to be here with you.
Could you preface for yourself, for the audience, and, of course, a little bit of background? Because we assume to give people credibility once they tell us their qualifications and experiences and whatnot. Go on.
Oh, great. Great. Well, I guess like you were saying, conspiracy people, they think they're dumb. Well, we are dumb, but we're not as dumb as they think. My background is basically as an independent researcher for the last 30 years or so. From the mid-1980s until the mid-1990s, I ran Borderland Sciences Research Foundation, which was founded in 1945, and today is pretty much just an inactive shell. Somebody sells the books. But during the phase when I was operating it, we ran active Tesla experiments where we demonstrated wireless power broadcast, faster-than-light electricity. Worked with Trevor Constable with the Etheric Rain Engineering, which was an outgrowth of Wilhelm Reich's cloud busting. I've worked with Dinsha Gaudiali's son on color healing, and Peter Lindemann on free energy. I've seen a lot in my day. I've been very fortunate in my experiences to meet a lot of amazing people and learn from them.
So that means that you have had access to what we call the alternative spectra of science, that which is deemed too crazy or too dangerous to the status quo to be given full public notice and recognition. It's consigned to the fringes, as it were. Is that about right?
Absolutely. But in reality, it's not the fringe. It's the core of what's really happening. For example,
we do live in an upside down world.
Oh, absolutely. There's no
everybody
doubt.
Everybody agree with that?
Yeah. Well, most people, let's say. Some people think things are just great and believe the newspapers. But one of my friends...
But the newspapers tell everybody things are terrible.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, right? It's part of it. It's engineering consciousness. You know, it's not just petty guys scamming for cash. You know, this is the engineering of the consciousness of the planet.
It's
a major multi-century operation which is going on and... You know, people waking up to the conspiracy thing is just, that's just for the tip of the iceberg. And that's what I've tried to penetrate through to what's really happening in the universe. So like one of the researchers whose work I relied on quite a bit, William Corliss, C-O-R-L-I-S-S, the Sourcebook Project. And he's published a full shelf of books on all the anomalies from the various categories of science. And these are well-recorded scientific, you know, geology, astrophysics, biology, all the bits that don't fit the theories. if you go read his books, not only will you understand the modern theory, but you'll understand why it's nonsense as well.
If you see that science itself has, for the large part, been covered up, the most integral discoveries and the most poignant discoveries of our time, in my opinion, have been those that have been hushed up the fastest, so they can't get out. What is it about these core issues of science, as you put it, that poses such a threat and would feasibly motivate someone to cover it up?
Well, as I say, my thesis is overall this is an engineering of consciousness. We need to wake up. There's very powerful forces trying to keep us asleep. And if you look at the history of science, going back a few hundred years, all the amazing inventions were immediately taken over. For example, I mean, there's many examples. We'll just use one of the best ones was Nikola Tesla. He developed, over 100 years ago, wireless broadcast of electricity, and he envisioned everybody having a little handheld thing where you could talk to anybody else anywhere in the world, static free. And he was giving this as a gift to the world in 1912. But, of course, by 1912, the newspapers were saying Tesla was crazy. And eventually they came out with this guy Einstein, who everybody says is a big genius. But, his paper was never even peer-reviewed. Einstein was like the poster boy for shutting everybody up about the ether and turning everybody's mind away. You had to be this super genius to understand this stuff. And when actually I believe that, the fundamentals of science are understandable to everybody. And that was what I tried to present in my presentation a week ago, that there's some very simple fundamental principles, which once you understand them, then you can penetrate the deeper mysteries, such as electricity or the activity of light.
You see, I think that society has been built up so that the core function of our existence is a controlled paradigm. For example, you talked about light and electricity, all of which we now have to pay for, and very few of us can generate for ourselves, at least without extreme cost. That's basically not even worth it in the end, like windmills or solar panels and all of these other sub-rate, inefficient, outdated, and, basically narrow-minded energy providers. That's what I think society really is something that saps energy out of you, which means, you have to go and you have to work off the sweat of your brow to make a whole bunch of money just so that you can sit home and be kept warm by all that energy that you produced in the sector in the first place. And you'll never, ever be able to escape it. Right? And that's the whole idea, is to trap you energetically in a system, in a very real sense. And in the spiritual sense of it, because of that kind of psychological mindset that would be imposed on a person, like, I'm trapped here forever, I can't actually change my situation, it lends itself to this kind of a spiritual and mental paralysis.
I couldn't agree more. That's a very good assessment. For one thing, the stuff we call money, that's something that drains us every time we touch it. Eric Dollard, the Tesla genius who I worked with 25 years ago, he used to say, electrons, electricity is an electrons. Where electrons appear, there's light, heat, and loss in the circuit. He said reserve bank dollars, they're like electrons. Wherever they appear in the society circuit, they cause loss in energy and wastage because it's like negative. So, it's very true. That's why they call them the power companies. It's not just about electricity, but it runs deeper. It's like Rudolf Steiner indicated that electricity is actually the human volitional force, but it's being tapped at the lower astral end with these giant magnets that just push this astral sludge down wires, and then they have transformers that pump it further. And, it is this low-grade, life-detrimental electricity as opposed to the magnetodielectricity that Tesla invented over 100 years ago, in which nobody even knows exists, right? Because everybody's mind is in a different paradigm.
Well, I don't think everybody's mind is in a quite so much a different paradigm And in fact, you know, the difficulty is there's a whole bunch of labeling processes that go over here. And isn't labeling itself kind of all you're really doing is trying to express a concept for somebody else to grasp onto. You know, if they understand what the label means and everything, they go along with you. But if they misinterpret what that label means and interpret you, therefore, as some description of conspiracy theorist or hushed, I say, whack job, then mm-hmm. the difficulty becomes the bridge of understanding. Now, here's what I mean. Like with the energy paradigm before, imagine you've got somebody in the same neighborhood with all of these other people who are completely dependent and essentially slaves of the system, walking around with cuffs and collars. They suddenly see a guy next door who has totally free energy, a huge amount of it indeed. It challenges the Maya, the very baseline of all their psychological conditioning, right? It's almost like it's, but the problem is the reactions aren't all uniform, you know? Certain people react different ways to those kind of stimuli when you bring somebody who's totally independent into a slave society. They did these tests on monkeys where they sprayed the monkeys with a hose that tried to get the bananas at the top of the, tree. And, then they stopped spraying them with the hose and introduced a new monkey into it. And as he tried to climb up the tree, all the other monkeys would grab him and pull him down because they didn't want to get sprayed. Okay, just like that that dog that kept getting electrified, not wanting to get thinking that he can't get out of the cage and sitting there and undergoing electric shocks. And these kind of tests have been done and have been proven conclusively that even if you are shown the way free, you will still sit there and force yourself to be a slave and a prisoner. How do you deal with that? We've lost our guest, actually, Tom here, so we're going to have to bring him up at the moment. But there's a comment that I think kind of is a good segue from here to a show the other day. Dr. Rebecca Carley, about dangers of vaccines and the medical devils and medical mafia and whatnot. And basically, this is the comment that he read out. Dr. Carley is a smart cookie. Vinny is a top-notch host. Great job getting this info out to the uninformed. Now, I'm all for looking positively and all of that, but is this show actually going out to the uninformed, or am I just informing people that are already awake by bringing on fabulous guests who know so much more than I do? Or what's the real paradigm here? Am I actually waking anybody up, really? Or is everybody just kind of waking up on their own? I don't know. I just feel that it's really fun to do. All right, Tom, you're back.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's that wonderful Wi-Fi service I have here.
Yeah. Well, after the break, we'll see if we can reconnect you on a landline. So in the meantime, what I was talking about was how people, if they see an independent person next to them and they've got the cuffs and collar and they're a slave and whatnot, many of them, just like the dog being electrified in the cage, will not set themselves free even if they're shown the way.
Oh, absolutely. As well as like Wilhelm Reich showed, right, there's actually like a what we call biopathic or characterological armoring. You know, most people, they don't think. They think they think. They really, truly, characterologically react to their imprints. And if their world structure gets altered, then it disrupts their character, so they get mad. And
Tom, you kind of dropped out there a little bit. You'll have to restate your position.
Okay, no, that's okay. Somehow I realized that when I came back online that I was hearing an echo of myself in the background. I was saying people think they think. They're just really characterologically reacting to their imprint, and they observe it, so they think that they're actually conscious of their activities. Some more or less. You know, we come up above and below that line. I'm guilty of that as anybody. But what I've noticed over the decades is when you show somebody something which is outside their worldview, if they don't really have an open mind and a flexible, you know, character structure, then they become unseated. They get angry. I've had people want to strangle me because I've just started talking to them about sort of like light and color, how it worked. You know, pointing out that, you know, you might not be able to see the stars in space. And, wow, you just get these crazy wild looks on people's faces, you know, because it's different than what they were told. And this, of course, goes into the conspiracy theory. You know, that's why people don't, you know, even today, I still know people think 9/11 was like Arab hijackers and these buildings just like fell down and it was just the weight of the buildings made them turn to powder. And they go, and then you question them and they go, but why would the government do it? I can't accept it because why? I go, forget why. Look at the evidence. But many people are incapable of that.
Why are they incapable?
Well, because they're characterologically structured. This is what Wilhelm Reich dealt with in his mass psychology of fascism and character
analysis. Specifically, what actually is that process? How do you imprint somebody with that mindset? Is it just the favored propaganda tactics of repetition, breakdown of the family, replace it with a different father figure, give them reward systems like they do in prisons for snitching on people or behaving in other kinds of scumbaggery type behavior? That's pretty much it, isn't it?
That's pretty much it. It starts when young. I mean, you look at like children's TV shows and it's just shocking, you know. I mean, 100 years ago, they'd hang people for showing that stuff to kids. I reckon
we still should.
I agree. You know, children are the future. You know, you have to give them good education, teach them properly. You know, show them how the world really is. Don't stick them in front of some nonsensical, frantic, cartoons. You know, with no real sense and all this frantic.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about being somewhat operatic and somewhat spastic. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. My very special guest today is Tom Brown from TomBrown.org. Welcome back.
Hey, nice to be back, Vinnie. Thank you.
Continue postulating away, if you will, because some of the interesting things that you came up with at your talk at the Uncensored conference earlier, there was hollow earth theory, expanding earth theory. Can you explain those two?
Well, part of the reason I look into these is not so much whether or not I believe one, but what I find interesting is that there are people that believe them, and there's been people that believe them for a lot of very serious reasons. So part of what I see is breaking out of this sort of like armored characterological structure is the ability to review different world systems without getting upset. But I particularly like the expanding Earth theory, which is easy to find information on that on the internet. And that makes the most sense. Back in 1963, National Geographic had up in the corner of their world map for the year a little thing on the expanding Earth, about how all the scientists decided that. But then next year we had plate tectonics, and that was gone. So whatever happened. And there are animations done by Neil Adams and others on the internet where you can actually watch and see how the world fits together. It makes more sense than just having like this one big lump of land on one side and then somehow like, you know, broke up and just like slid all around the world. So this is what I believe is actually behind today the increase in earthquakes. If you look at, they're all happening on the expansion joints. You know, the volcanoes are going off. So the Earth has become very active. And of course, if the Earth does expand, well, then there's a possibility that maybe it's hollow on the inside. We don't really know. All we know is they interpret waves using a certain worldview or a certain paradigm. Maybe there is a molten core, maybe there's not. I tend to think not myself. But then I like what's called the canopy theory, which is that as the Earth formed, it sort of formed in concentric layers. And as the geological layers fell to Earth over successive die-offs, which were like the end of the dinosaurs, those sorts of things, which they blame on comets, but can't be a comet because there's actually problems with like the iridium layer throughout the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary. You penetrate into these sort of beliefs and you start finding all kinds of problems, so the things don't add up. So I've tried to find a model that actually works, and this is with the expanding, with the canopy theory, that as these layers progressively fell down to Earth, then the life started happening down here rather than further up. And what was left was the water. And that fell about 12,000 years ago and is recorded in the various flood legends around the world, such as, Noah's flood. And, of course, caused all the damage, which is now interpreted as ice ages. Because, it looks like there was no ice on Antarctica 12,000 years ago. So how did that get there? What flash froze the mammoths? There's so many mysteries out there that, people get lost just like arguing about like the conspiracy theories, and which is good because you want to wake up to everything. But, man, there's some fantastic stuff happening out in the sciences as well.
Yeah.
We've been clouded everywhere.
I suppose the real question is, what exactly did freeze those mammoths flash frozen? I mean, what would do something like that?
Liquid nitrogen bath. That would work.
Yeah.
Because if you look at forensically, like you go up to like the Arctic today, and let's say a reindeer drops dead of a heart attack and falls into a crevice. By the time it freezes, the inside of the stomach is already digested. Even though the animal's dead, the acid still works. So it's digested its meal. The blood crystals have gone bad. Basically, it's already started decaying from the inside by the time it freezes. This is just forensic truth. Just look at how it works. But yet these mammoths, which are much huger animals than a reindeer, they're flash frozen into the stomachs where there's no digestion took place. The blood crystals are still pure, as though they were frozen as alive. So this was intense cold. So one way I've looked at it is if the waters fell in, and they would have fallen in energetically around where the auroral bands are, which is where the permafrost is, then they would have pulled in space above the troposphere, which would have flash frozen. That's cold enough there. And it would have basically helped chill the world in that sense. So there is one potential explanation. There's pluses and minuses. As I say, try to keep them all open, and we need to review this. It's not like I have any answers. I just have a lot of questions about, I keep an open mind and I looking at all these mysteries.
Yeah, me too. I say you can't figure the world out, and anybody who reckons they've got it all figured out has got it wrong.
Oh, absolutely. It was like one of my favorite old shows, Kung Fu, with Kwai Chang Kane. On one of the shows, somebody comes up to him and says, "Oh, you must have the answer." And Kwai Chang Kane says, "I seek not the answer, but to better understand the question." And I believe that's where I'm at. I have a lot of questions. It might sound like I have answers. I answer the question. I tell you what I think. But really, the more I know, the more curious I get. This is crazy multidimensional universe. Because my belief system, and I think this is something I discussed in my talk, is I have multiple belief systems. I can accept the one where the third rock from the sun, where we're going around this sort of like sun thing on a little planet. It makes sense. Yeah, there's reasons to believe that. But there's also reasons to believe that we're in the center. And that's like a higher order space, where life responds to. And you can find this through like plant tropisms, reactions of metals to planetary movements, the way they're affected by agriculture. And this is what Rudolf Steiner was actually trying to get together through the natural scientific section of the Goetheanum, although much of where he was really heading and what the intent was is sort of lost on the modern sort of Steiner movement. It's just sort of because Steiner was teaching people how to overcome the worldview by using special methods of education, but now they use his special methods of education to teach the modern worldview. So it's become the opposite of what it set out to be.
Well, kind of like, I believe it might have been Bill Clinton who said something like this, but I'm paraphrasing. It's like, when somebody asks you a question that you don't want to answer, don't answer that question. Answer the question you wish they'd asked you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My father taught me that years ago when he heard me do some radio shows. I used to do the old Radio Free America shows with Tom Valentine, do Fractal Fridays on alternative science. And, you know, my dad's going, well, yeah, you shouldn't let the guy lead you like that. I said, well, I'm answering the questions. He said, no, he said, just let him talk and then you say what you want. And I've developed that technique. So, although I love dialogues like this, this is, you know, great. I love your lighthearted approach to all these. You have to do it all with a smile.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because the reality's it's pretty harsh sometimes, especially when you talk about the eugenics agenda, how much chemicals and poisons are all around us, and how is there a cumulative effect? Do you think of all of these different toxins of our environment, of our simple understanding? Do all of these toxins prevent us from understanding who we are and what's going on right now?
Oh, absolutely. I believe that that's part of the agenda. Is there some madness going on that we're not totally aware of in our way we see things? You know, we're seeing the edges of it. We see rascals like the Bilderbergs and all that, and we know something's up, but we don't. I'm not even sure those guys fully know what's up. They're probably more tools themselves of something behind, because, you know, you just look at, I mean, there's been nuclear waste dumped all over the planet, you know, intentional pollution all over the place, and the radio pollution, you know, well, we could have had Tesla's wireless, which wouldn't have affected the environment, but instead we've got all this, you know, wires strung across the planet, you know, with all this crappy electromagnetism everywhere. You know, humans have fouled their nest, but it's happened because we've been unaware of what the controllers have been doing and have been basically doing it with our consent. Our uninformed consent, we can say. But you can go into things like, there was those books years ago. I don't know if you read Morning and the Magicians and Eternal Man.
I disagree, those? Actually. No, well, I was just going to go back to the original point there about sure. Uninformed consent. Well, in actual fact, no, it is informed consent. There's some kind of a loophole I've been led to believe in the law of informed consent in the United States that allows you to basically experiment on people without directly telling them, so long as it's on display somewhere. Kind of like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, everything's up front. It's like, you know, Gordon Israel, who was on your show in the past, like he was saying, you know, you walk into the Reserve Bank here in New Zealand and they got the red shield up, right? You know, these people, they speak in symbols. They're telling you everything. It's just that we don't know what they're saying. So, right. So I used uninformed consent, you know, because of the way we think. But truly, it is informed consent because it was like Ben Stewart, who did the Esoteric Agenda documentary. I liked what he said. He said, you know, there is a conspiracy out there, but it's really, you know, we can't wake up the world. We can only wake up ourselves and, you know, let the energy spread out from that point. But I was going to make the – go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No.
I was gonna make,
it's my show. You go ahead.
Oh, thank you. No, I was going to say, well, there's the books Morning of the Magicians and Eternal Man, Impossible Possibilities by Powles and Bergier. I don't know if you read those. They influenced me heavily back in the 70s. When I was a teenager.
Were those your only heavy influences in the 70s?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. There's a long list there. But
it was the 70s. That's the excuse I always hear. It was the 70s. But anyway, continue.
It was. I remember way back then still, which is good. But now these books, Eternal Man, they started coming out. These were the first introduction I had to really Fulcanelli and alchemy, and they were talking about this whole new wave of, you know, the secret sciences that were happening. But something struck me when I read them, that something was wrong, and they were pushing nuclear as the new alchemy. And I ran across this other ways where I looked at, like, the radionics schools in America eventually turned into, you know, this Charles Colson, I can't remember the name of the magazine, the electronic thing. It used to be radionics. It turned into starting to promote nuclear. And even people like George Unger, who was wrote on the etheric sciences out of the anthroposophical movement. He eventually became an apologist for the nuclear industry. And I'm thinking, well, a lot of these people have been programmed to think that this nuclear stuff, and which I view as a death cult, is actually some sort of higher alchemy. And in essence, if you stand back and look at the planet, they're dumping this stuff everywhere intentionally. They're running these plants they know are crap, you know, just to keep control. But somebody behind the scenes knows that they're totally disrupting and transforming the surface of this planet, you know, in a bad way.
I'm coming up with a theory right now as you're saying this. You know how Zbigniew Brzezinski said at the Council on Foreign Relations meeting that there's a big, unprecedented global awakening?
Yes, I do have seen that quote.
And you know how they've been talking about on the Georgia Guidestones, they want to reduce the world's population down to 500 million?
Right.
And you know how there's all these deep underground military bases all over the show?
Absolutely. You know, I knew Richard Sauter years ago.
So what say they've decided to dump all the radiation over the Earth now? And you can heal yourself from radiation poisoning, it's fine, but the main point is they're going to stop population growth because now what's being proposed is that they, in fact, screen babies. The first generation trimester children are now dying. There's been a 35% increase in infant deaths around where Dr. Bill Deagle is living in Southern California there. Mm-hmm. And now what New Zealand and American media are saying is that we're going to scan everybody's babies to make sure that they're not deformed or anything like that. And if they are deformed, we'll give you the option to abort them or whatnot. So what's going to happen is because of the huge amount of deformities that are going to be caused by all this nuclear stuff, basically very, very few people are now going to be having children at all.
Oh, definitely. It's going to turn into like Mutiland on the old Judge Dredd comics, you know?
and the remainder that aren't having deformed children will probably be sterile.
Yeah, absolutely.
So so my postulation is that the end of the world, end of the population eugenics agenda has just been set in motion.
Oh, it has. Well, they've accelerated it. It's been, well, like last night I watched on History Channel, you know, conspiracy theory, Jesse Ventura, and it was the one on the Bilderbergers. And, you know, it's like, you watch Jesse, I mean, you know, it's kind of fun. He's sort of like, you know, sort of megaphone diplomacy. He gives you enough information to get you mad. But, you know, the fact that these shows are so well done and on the air, they're basically flaunting it in our face. They're broadcasting it. They're telling us that they're genociding us. There's no doubt about it. You know, so what do you do? You know, that's why I look to the stars. I look, you know, to there's a higher, more refined way of dealing with things. You know, but, you know, that's why the political process is nonsense. You know, you're not going to get anywhere in that.
You'll get somewhere, all right. But it's going to be. But as we all well know, everything that they promise seems to vanish like mist in the morning. Such as the lies from the mouths of President BS and our Prime Minister, John Key, Fed Reserve little scumbag lackey he may be. And now they're talking about giving the Reserve Bank even more powers now. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Don't you just love being a slave? We'll be right back.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. Woo. What you want to do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow like this?
Like this?
Like this? Let's do it.
How many dudes you know move like this? How many dudes you know flow like this?
Not many, if any, not many, if any.
How many dudes you know got skills to go and rock a show like this?
I
don't know anybody. Check the mic.
Welcome back. It's been a long time. It's been a long time coming. And nobody rocks a show like this. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. on American Freedom Radio, bro, for sure.
Yeah.
And we've got my very special guest, Tom Brown. And we wanted to talk about the upcoming elections, and it's not a pornography reference, although it could be if you happen to roam in political pedophile circles. But the Reserve Banksters in New Zealand are the filthiest, dirtiest scum of the lot, and they rule this effing country. Okay, make no mistakes. Every time a prime minister is elected, the night of the election, he is given a call from Treasury at the behest of the Reserve Bank to be told that some description of crisis has been building up in previous administrations, and now they need to tax the bejesus out of everybody, privatise everything, and or pass draconian legislation to spy on them and enslave them all. That is politics. If you don't understand the New World Order, you don't understand politics. And if you don't vote for a party that is openly anti-New World Order, you will get raped. And so will your country, and so will all of your countrymen. What are your thoughts on this, Tom, this year in the elections?
Right. Well, I honestly don't pay too much attention to them. I go along with Eric Dollard, the Tesla genius who I worked with, you know, a few decades back. And he used to say, to an electrical engineer, politics is like a parasitic oscillation in the circuit. You know, parasitic oscillation being like feedback, something that takes over and distorts the true circuit, the true body politic. Now, the Reserve Bankers, it's hard to say. Some people say that they're actually acting honorably and it's their job to wake us up, and they're just like putting the screws down until we stand up. Like the American Supreme Court, they ruled that rights are only afforded the belligerent claimant. If you don't claim your rights, you don't have them. But I can actually say, having spent a few years in court with the IRD, that they don't play fair. There's no doubt about that. I've seen some pretty dodgy stuff happen in court where, yeah, you filed motions properly and they just like ride over them. They won't hear the real things. You know, if you try to pay real legal tender, put gold in and stuff, and everybody, they like jump around like you put a poker up their ass or something. You know, it's just, they really freak out because they don't know what to do if you start figuring it out. But as I always said, that if you vote, you can't complain, because you've therefore participated in the, because who can be represented? You know, look up representation in Beauvier's. You can represent rights of an ancestor, a testator, somebody died with a will, an intestate, or a corporation. If you have a representative, you've admitted to being dead. You cannot vote if you're alive, living being, technically.
That's right. So, and not to mention, even if you did vote, you wouldn't be able to elect anybody, because you're not an elector, you're a voter.
Right. Yeah, no, it's all part of the illusion. And every few years, they get everybody all worried about that. And everybody says, oh, well, now, you know, let's get labor in because, you know, National screwed it up. And it just goes back and forth. You know, it's that old Hegelian dialectic to, you know, keep people confused.
Have you noticed something? It's like Grand Slam tennis, and we're the ball.
I feel that way many times, Vinny.
I mean, it's like, man, it's fun. You get to sail through the air for a bit, but then you get smacked in the side of the head.
I've been rolled in court, you know, with what I've considered corrupt judges and corrupt government departments. But then you find they're not even really the government. Look at the New Zealand shield, the New Zealand seal. And what do you see down the middle is these three ships. Then go on the internet and search for, you know, coat of arms of the East India Company. And lo and behold, there's the three ships. Right. So what we got here is just the East India Company managing trade, with the Reserve Bank being the true governance.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult position.
Funny. It's hilarious. The whole freaking colonial system, which everybody thinks is dead, all those old evil kind of regimes of power and monarchy and the black nobility, which everybody think don't exist no more, have still been there and have only grown in power and influence so much that they control virtually everything of consequence on this planet. And now they are moving to consolidate the one thing that remains: total power. They got all the money, they got all the resources, Now they need total power over everybody, unequivocal, military, psychological power, all forms of it.
Right. Well, that's why I believe that ultimately it's a spiritual war. It's a war on our souls, a war on our consciousness. You know, they don't want us to think. They don't want us to be awake. But, you know, like collectively, you know, we have more power than any of them. They're just, you know, scared, ruthless thugs that, you know, can't really see the light of day. But they do have the power, and they also have all that amazing suppressed technology like Tesla's wireless and heavens knows, you know, the flying saucers. I'm not much of a believer in aliens. I'm, you know, because not that life isn't everywhere in the universe, but I think a lot of the UFO activity all grew out of the, you know, like what the Nazis were working on and others. Because who was it? Roswell. People, oh, yeah, Roswell, alien craft crashed right next to all the Nazis that came over in Operation Paperclip and were working on secret disc craft. So why are the aliens going to go crash next to them? That was like one of those double intelligence things. You know, the weather balloon was a cover for the alien thing, but the alien thing was the cover for the real one, is that this is a real Earth project of advanced technology.
You've heard of the UFO Disclosure Project, right? What I find interesting is that they're specifically disclosing that they've seen unidentified flying objects and not aliens, right? But the connotation is that it's aliens, whereas I think that there's a possibility for that, but what I find a tad bit more likely, and in a lot of UFO sightings, is that they're simply classified aircraft.
Oh, could well be. I spend a lot of time looking at the skies, and I lived up in Northern California for about 10 years and used to go out Black Sands Beach, out Cape Mendocino, which is the furthest west point. And I'll tell you, you see some amazing stuff in the skies. I'd see stuff come bolting in like a meteor and then would come over like King's Peak, which is about 5,000-foot mountain on the California coast, the Lost Coast, they call it, because no roads through there. And as the thing looks like it's a meteor shooting in, when it gets by the coast, all of a sudden it turns into an airplane, starts blinking lights. And I'm not the only person seen this. I've spent hundreds of nights on the beach watching this stuff. And there is some amazing stuff going on if you just open your eyes and look around.
Yeah. And,
I was even reporting on chemtrails back in the 1980s, you know, like Tom Valentine on the he didn't believe me. He's going, oh, no way. I'm going, no, look, man, there's something, these planes are modifying the clouds. There's something going on up there. And he's going, oh, I'm not, because that was probably 1987, 88, you know. And of course, then once until the mid 90s, people start saying it. And now it's just so obvious that, so just, you know, look up to the sky. You'd be amazed what you see. Yes. And while I'm on that subject, you know, people are talking lately about, you know, the Earth shifting, the moon rotating. And I just got a couple pictures of a good friend of mine up in the States who has been taking astronomical pictures since he was 10 years old. He sent me an excited email last night with a couple pictures, which I've just forwarded on to John at Uncensored. Hopefully we can run this and investigate this. But he's claiming that the moon's actually rotated. And he sent me the pictures. I need to look into this a little more. I'm not absolutely certain this is happening, but it may well be. You know, we need to really be open to major changes. Our space is anisotropic, which means it's unevenly energized. And we've moved over the last 30 years into a very high energy state. And it's affecting all the planets, not just Earth.
You know what? Somehow, I think this makes me think of the Truman Show, you know, when the light kind of like breaks through the ceiling and comes down, mate, and all the people that are controlling the whole freaking place are sitting there in the moon.
It could be. And
the visage is starting to go slightly awry now, you know. We've all realized that we're in this global Truman Show, ladies and gentlemen. Tom, thank you so much for sharing this hour with me. It's been a real pleasure, mate.
And, hey, thank you, Penny.
Is there any final words of wisdom you'd love to give the audience before we go off?
Oh, I say just, you know, enjoy life. I say, you know, just look to the sky. You know, look out. You know, don't believe anything unless you believe everything. And then you can, like, sort between it. So I say just keep an open mind and keep some good humor while you're at it.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's kind of the whole point of the show. Try as I may, I haven't found any dedicated truth or comedy talk shows like this, but there's plenty of funny truthers out there, though, bro. I tell you, man. Absolutely hysterical. In fact, a good host named Tracy Kennedy and Mike Chambers, two very funny individuals. In fact, I'm going to have a panel discussion with them organized at some point. And that'll be a good barrel of laughs, isn't it? Because, hey, look at it this way, ladies and gentlemen. It's just the end of the world. There's no need to get upset about it.
You got front row seats. Just enjoy it.
Absolutely. It's like the motion master at Rainbow's End, you know. Yeah. The earth will take care of the motion mastering, and you just need to master your emotions and learn how to laugh and love. And we'll be right back next hour with Bob Chapman, the international forecaster. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Oh, yeah, welcome back. It's hour number two, ladies and gentlemen, of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And speaking of friggin' nuts, the financial industry. As we've been talking about many times on this show, full of criminals and crooks and the various forms of scumbaggery to the hilter, all of which conveniently tied in with Federal Reserve systems, which we also have here in New Zealand. And for some... the most in-depth commentary, I find, you have to go to the experts. Bob Chapman, the international forecaster.com, is renowned worldwide as basically the premier trends researcher and forecaster in terms of economic news. I'd like to welcome him now to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My esteemed pleasure, Bob Chapman.
It's very nice to be here. It's my first time, and let's hope it goes well.
We're getting your cherry popped here today, Bob.
Yes.
Now, the most recent news that has been weighing on my mind, Bob, and but before we go into that, is Greece. But before we do that, I'd love you to introduce yourself to the audience and preface for those listeners, particularly in New Zealand, who may not be familiar with you.
Well, do you want a backgrounder?
Absolutely.
Sure. I was born in Boston, went to school there, went to university there. I came from very humble surroundings. I worked for the U.S. government in counterintelligence for several years. And after that, I got involved in the securities industry, where I was there for 29 years. Owned my own firm. I was the largest gold silver stockbroker in the world. I retired 23 years ago, and I couldn't stand it. It's too young to retire. And so I started the International Forecast, which is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues. So I have a very deep background in finance, economics, and social and political issues. I lived in Europe for a number of years, as well as in Africa, the Caribbean, Central, South America, Mexico, and Canada for extended periods of time. And I now live in the third world. I prefer it because the American government doesn't like me very well.
Yeah. That's what I consider New Zealand to be. Pretty third world with a government that doesn't like me.
Well, good. Now they have another person they can chastise.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of endless lists, don't you think, Bob? That if you do stand up, and it doesn't matter which country you're in, because they're all under the throes and controls of the New World Order anyway. So who cares? Doesn't matter where you stand up. Just freaking do it, because if you don't, you won't have that opportunity to inspire those around you. Now, speaking of which. Because you had such a prestigious experience in the financial industry, I would rationalize that you have indeed mentored and inspired many economic commentators of today. Would I be correct?
Well, obliquely, it wasn't by design. When people come to me or I see them and I think they need help, I help them. And I never ask for anything because I don't want anything. And I've had a very successful life and career, so I don't have to do that. And when I recommend brokers or coin brokers as opposed to stockbrokers or publications or whatever, I never get paid anything by anybody. The only people that pay me are the subscribers, and we got lots of them all over the world, a lot of them in Australia and a few of them in New Zealand. One of the things I left out is I lived in Europe for about a dozen years in different countries, and I speak their languages over there. So it was quite an education, something that most people never get exposed to.
Well, and I suppose, is that part of the reason why you became an international forecaster, whereas if you hadn't gone to Europe at all, would you just be an American forecaster, do you think?
Maybe that's the way when I ended up. And I must say that I could never write the publication with the success that I have without having all that background. It would have never happened, or it certainly wouldn't have happened to the degree that it has. I started going on radio and television in the early 1970s as a result of my work in the stock markets. And I've probably been on, I don't know, 20,000 radio programs. I do 40 hours a week now on radio. I don't do much TV anymore because they won't let me on. They tell me that the public doesn't want the truth, so they got a problem. I don't.
Well, when they say the public don't want the truth, what they say is, what they're really meaning is, we don't want to tell the public the truth, and you won't be the kind of person who will come on and play ball and shut up about certain things while being able to talk about others. So it's not worth the risk, I'm sorry, to the current economic paradigm to have you on, because look, New Zealand News has just come out saying that we've had a 0.08% growth in the GDP over the last quarter. The headline is economic recession and depression over, with better projections than expected for next quarter. Now, Bob, what is your take on that?
Are we talking about the U.S. economy?
Oh, we're talking about the New Zealand economy, but
okay.
As far as I'm concerned, they're all the same kettle of fish, don't you think?
Well, they're going to have to do the same thing if they want to stay out of deflationary depression that all the other countries have done, and that's print money and credit. That's the only way they can temporarily avoid it. But almost every country has the same problem. There's some that don't, but not many. Canada is in very good shape. Australia is in so-so shape. And Mexico is in very good shape. For the moment, Brazil and Argentina are doing all right, but they have very high inflation, like the U.S. and China has. China said the other day that their inflation was 6.4%. And if you believe that, I have a bridge for sale. The real number is about 15%, and it varies very widely from province to province. And most of it's embedded in food prices and petrol.
Well, at the moment, what's happening in New Zealand, I'd like to get your take on this, because we're borrowing approximately 350-plus million a week. We have an opposition leader now who's like a 6% approval rating, and the current Prime Minister is a Federal Reserve Bank board member who represented Merrill Lynch's derivatives interests during the build-up to the 2008 financial collapse, which, as you know, was caused by derivatives. And now the solution is, from the opposition leader, is we need a capital gains tax on all property, in the country, and we need to give the Reserve Bank of New Zealand more powers over employment statistics, property taxes, and inflation, just like they have given the Australian Reserve Bank. What is your take on that?
Disaster.
Total.
Right down the spout. Not up the spout, down the spout.
How exactly would giving all these powers away result? Because I know that the World Bank and IMF have some play cards here. And as far as I know, New Zealand's not quite as far progressed along the, 101 points of enslavement. And I feel that this election season is going to be one of the most embroiled in controversy and turmoil and importance. But the irony is that the elections themselves are totally irrelevant.
Well, how many people live in New Zealand, more or less?
4 million, give or take.
Well, that's a little bit less, 40%, 35% of the population of Greece. I wanted to try to make a comparison. If they keep on doing what they're doing, they're going to end up going into default like some of the other nations. You just can't keep on borrowing. I mean, there's a limit to it. And, of course, the more you borrow, the more money service that there is on the interest, on the debt. And they're creating new debt every week. That's not very good. It's certainly not a solution. The only solution is for them to figure out how to cut down governmental costs on a rolling basis, you know, not 1 year. Over the next 5 years, if they think that the elimination of 20% of federal workers is what is needed to get their economy balance sheet into balance, well, that's what they got to do. I don't know what the tax structure is there, but do you have VAT?
Or AP?
The VAT, value-added tax?
We have GST, goods and services tax. So it's about 15% extra taxation on all goods and services bought. We also have the carbon tax, cap and trade, which is 5 cents per litre on petrol, and also up to 5% on electricity bills. And it's interesting that they specifically mention up to, because it means, in my opinion, that what they're going to do is just charge the extra 5%, even if their costs haven't increased by that margin. So there's progressive taxation, like you say, coming through the whole thing. But yeah.
So
and, income tax.
What is the GST? 20% or what?
15%.
15.
On everything.
And what is the middle-income bracket tax bite?
If you're on a lower income, it's between 19.5 and 22%. If you're on a higher income bracket, the maximum is, drumroll please, 33%.
Well, those are pretty low taxes.
But the problem is...
That's about... 25% lower than the average in Europe, which is 70%. And that would be GST plus regular taxation on average. And that changes every quarter or 6 months. So, you know, it's a floating number, so to speak. But that's approximate. And that tax bite is far worse. So I think you probably will see them attempt to increase taxes to offset their spending. But the best way to do that is to cut back. What are the unemployment figures officially?
Unemployment, if you're under 25, unemployment is approximately 40%. Total unemployment is hovering around about the 6% mark, I think. official
what, Mark 16?
Pardon?
What was the overall unemployment?
Overall employment was about 6% officially.
Mm. That means it's probably 13 or 14.
Yeah, I thought.
Because they all lie about their numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So you got an unemployment problem.
Yeah, yeah, and especially, as I said, amongst the young people here. Now, the opposition leaders, of course, has a solution to this, and you said that they're going to raise progressive more taxation. He's proposing a capital gains tax on all private property kind of thing. If you on-sell that private property, you'll get like an extra 10-15% tax on that, which we currently don't have. And their justification for this is saying that taxation will encourage people to instead invest their money in productive areas of society that produce products, like businesses and things of that nature, rather than property speculation.
No, that's idiotic. And I'll tell you why they're doing it, because they have so many foreigners that have come into the country and bought property. They're trying to stop them.
Yeah.
I run a column on Australia and New Zealand, so I have, for an American especially, some familiarity with what goes on there. But
well,
that's why they want that tax.
Winston Peters said that, and this is a comparison for people, I believe Finland has about 10, 14 million people, and they let in about 500 immigrants per year. This is according to Winston Peters, the leader of the New Zealand First Party here. New Zealand, by contrast, has 4 million people, and we let in 50,000 immigrants per year. So that would probably account for the enormous amount of foreign property buyout, wouldn't you think, Bob?
No. A lot of it's speculation. Because land prices are cheaper there than they are in other places.
That's true.
So that's what they're after.
They're they're after our land, productive farmland as well, you think? Because a few large...
Well, yeah, they are. Land. They are. There's a lot of people with a lot of money out there in the world, and, you know, they buy homes and property and farms all over the world.
And
I mean, there are no
provincial
barriers today, so to speak. It's not unusual to see someone who lives in Paris buy a home in Mazatlan in Mexico because the cost of real estate there is cheaper than it is, say, on the Côte d'Azur, which is the coast in the south of France.
So we're talking about a comparable cost of property as the reason for foreign financial speculation in our resident property markets. Our property is just basically cheaper by comparison to theirs, so they buy it as an investment.
And I think that's true. Plus, you have a very peaceful country for the most part. You know, you wouldn't want to buy property outside of New York City or Johannesburg, South Africa, both of which have very high current crime rates.
Indeed. Indeed. And I suppose that the real estate market probably has a higher crime rate than either New York or Johannesburg ever would, because there's copious quantities of criminals running the whole game there, aren't they? And don't they just love that? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My remarkably fabulous special guest today is Bob Chapman from the InternationalForecaster.com. Join us in the chat room at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be back in a moment. Keep moving, ladies and gentlemen, because your enemy is closing in. Welcome back to my very special guest, Bob Chapman, the international forecaster. Now, getting into this topic here, the spoils of global finance, in my opinion, are not cash or debt, but in fact assets and resources. And what's happening in New Zealand right now is Petrobras, which is a well-known Brazilian uber polluter, oil speculator and whatnot, of course, in the employ of various globalist banks and financiers, to my understanding, is now, there are actually, Bob, I don't think you'll believe this, but there are something like a dozen fracking things that have just been signed up all around New Zealand. New Zealand's a very small country. And fracking does a huge amount of damage, particularly to the water table. And there was some kind of conspiracy theory coming about that gas explosions in Auckland, as so much as Onehunga not too long ago, were caused through the process of fracking, which is happening down the Waikato River or something. I just feel like we're in this giant asset and resource grab, basically. What do you think, Bob?
It could very well be. I didn't know that they were operating there, and it could be ominous. What kind of results are they getting?
Well, they're doing soundings off of the coast, and when you're doing that, it'll completely destroy the marine environment because the sonic booms that they're shooting underwater penetrate the ground and the rock. And apparently it really just explodes fish, ears of marine life and whatnot. And also they happen to have another prospecting parlay going off down the coast of the South Island where one of our mayors, Tim Shadbolt, is. And they're planning to extract the oil and give New Zealand, I believe, a 40 cent a barrel cut from the barrel that they extract out of the ground out there, and no guarantee against damage caused, of course.
And who is putting up all the money for the exploration?
That's a good question because the global big oil exploration and companies are mostly financed by the World Bank and IMF. To my knowledge, which is why they've also incidentally become huge players in the carbon trading market. And when I say that, people say, oh, there's not a current carbon trading market. Actually, there is. My friend bought shares in it, and she gets a prospectus every year to see how those carbon trading shares are going. So they do exist. They are being traded.
Well, you've got a carbon tax as well.
Indeed.
Which is, how can I best characterize it? It's a scam.
Yeah.
A scam loaded onto the people.
Uber Ponzi scheme, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you've got the same thing in Australia, and many other countries are going to try to implement it. And next you're going to see a financial transactions tax. Because they need money to run the UN and the IMF and the World Bank. And everybody caught on to what the World Bank and the IMF were doing. They go into countries like yours, and if you need money, they'll give it to you, and then they put in an austerity program, and then they bring in the big hitters from Europe and the United States to buy up all your utilities for 20 or 30, 40 cents on the dollar.
That's true. That's true. That's what happened to our telecom, our major telecommunications corporation, got sold to Bell Atlantic, which was affiliated with the World Bank for pennies on the dollar. And same with our state housing assets, on our state forest assets as well, forests that we've grown for 50 years that we shoveled off without even so much as a valuation.
Yeah, well, you've got crooks running a government, like most governments in the world, and that's what you have to expect. And if you're willing to tolerate it, that's fine. If you don't, overthrow the government.
I think I've become allergic, Bob. You know, like my body can't tolerate this kind of stuff. It's almost like I break out in some kind of anaphylactic shock. I find myself screaming at the top of my no kidding. I was driving home today, and I was listening to my the leader of our opposition in the Labor Party talk about how a capital gains tax is. It's funny you should mention that, Bob. It talked about how a capital gains tax is going to be good for the country, and how progressive taxation on asset speculation is also going to be good to encourage business. And I was screaming, literally at the top of my voice, such horrible swear words that I cannot reveal them here on air, ladies and gentlemen, because my body literally rejects it. My rage molecules explode. It can't be.
Any capital gains tax retards any kind of business development. It doesn't stop it, but those who want to invest, do research, whatever, all of these parties think twice about investment and limit investment because of those kinds of taxes.
Now,
it's one of the problems America's got today. Capital gains tax, 18%. And if you own gold and silver and sell it, the tax on that is 28%. It shows you how prejudicial they are. It has nothing to do with the taxation. It's punishment for owning a real asset. Mr. Bernanke was asked yesterday in the House hearings by Ron Paul if he considered gold money. And he said no. And, of course, he couldn't say yes. And Ron Paul asked him, well, why do you have all this gold hanging around? He said, well, I've had it for a long time, and it's kind of like sentimental.
It's sentimental.
Hmm?
Sentimental, in other words.
And they expect intelligent people to be to believe such garbage. Every country in the world has its problems. And they're going to get a lot worse. And people in every country have got to get used to living differently. The great Holocaust days since World War II are over. And our internationalist masters have decided that they want to have us all under world government. And so in that process, they're trying to destroy all the governments and at the same time retain control. And I'm sure you've talked about this on your program.
Of course.
And I've been talking about it for 52 years.
I'm interested
and
to know.
And this is it. They're going for everything.
I was interested to know, Bob, just exactly how you woke up to the New World Order and this progressive taxation and world government scheme.
Well, not many people talked about that in the 1950s and 60s. And when I went to work for counterintelligence for the United States government, the first thing I learned in a book that we had, The War in Ether, which means the war over the airwaves, I found out that the Japanese diplomatic code had been broken by both the British and the Americans in 1937. So they knew every single thing that the Japanese were doing. And with the Germans, they broke the Enigma code in 1941. They knew everything they were doing, too. But the point here is that the United States wanted to get into the war. And so what they did, knowing the Japanese wanted to make a blow at the against the United States so they could conquer Asia, they lined the ships up in Pearl Harbor and had them bombed. And they got in the war. And that was a deliberate act. And when I saw that, I said, these people are worse than the mafia. And it was an education because I found out how evil the governments were and how all these wars that we had were phony. They're all set up. And so that was my awakening.
So it seems, do you believe that that might be happening to a lot of other agents out there? I mean, did you continue to work for the agency after you knew the truth?
I had to.
So you could eat?
In the olden days, the United States had a conscription, a draft, where you had to go into the military unless you were mentally or physically inept, or if you were in an advanced degree, or even undergraduate for that matter in university. And many had to complete service, which was normally 2 years in any of these services, for 2 years even after you get out of university. And so I was one of the chosen. And I happened to be extraordinarily bright. And so they stuck me in counterintelligence, which is probably the worst thing they could have ever done, because I was extremely good at it. And I learned a great deal. And it helped shape my future life.
Do you suppose that there that this kind of happens a lot when people first go in? They have that. Did you have that kind of patriotic ritual at that point? Did you really want to go in there and then kind of get disillusioned, or did you already have a suspicious mind?
No, I didn't have that kind of suspicious mind. I had a very inquiring mind, and I was suspicious of the things that went on domestically in the United States. But as far as foreign things were concerned, you know, I had studied history to a great degree, and I loved it. And so I was different than most young men. And when I went in, you know, you don't get out until your time is up. And in order to go in counterintelligence instead of being in a line outfit or a tank or something, I took extra time. And I worked through it. One of the big advantages of having been exposed to that was that I was in with extraordinarily bright people. And you can't help but learn every minute something new. And so it was a tremendous experience. Fortunately, it was not during wartime.
Now, we talk about psychopaths and how they seem to be running the country and whatnot, and American Medical Journal defines a psychopath as somebody who's very nice and friendly and whatever when you first meet them, but ultimately has no real depth to their personality and has no long-lasting relationships and will generally cluster in one of three places: business, politics, and the entertainment industry. In your dealings in the financial industry, Bob, did you meet individuals that kind of fit these general characteristics? And if so, a lot of them or not too many?
Well, I think today, and perhaps for the past 30 or 40 years, we have a lot of people in government and business in general, as well as in banking and Wall Street and transnational corporations. And they're probably best described in an easy manner as being sociopaths. In other words, the end justifies the means from a Machiavellian viewpoint, and at the same time, they have no conscience. And that's what we got in industry and business and so on today. And it's worldwide, it's just not in America. In fact, I think it was a very big problem in England, Australia, many years before. And this is why people in countries do things that they do, even though they're not supposed to do them.
It seems that, particularly prime ministerial positions, presidencies, the people that get in there aren't very often the fiercely independent kind in a lot of ways. They sort of toe party lines, they spout rhetoric, they read teleprompters, and very rarely are they the progenitor of original thought or political discourse. And I hold this to be a self-evident truth amid all political stages, and that's all that they are, ladies and gentlemen, is a stage. And the reason why I call this a stage is because they're playing you. okay? They're trying to entertain you into giving them a little donation. And in fact, speaking of which, I sent an email away to the National Party, the Republicans of New Zealand, Bob, asking them for a list of their declared donators and contributors that have donated over $15,000 in any one year, which they are publicly required to submit. And so it'll be interesting to find out precisely who's stuffing our fabulous politicians' pockets with money so that they can pave the way for them to take the rest of our assets and our freedom. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Bob Chapman is my guest. We'll be right back.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And that's precisely what it is. Welcome back. Ooh. The newspapers shout a new style is growing, but you don't know whether or not it's coming or going. I have a problem, ladies and gentlemen. Just like everybody else has the same problem as I do, I'm running out of time with my very special guest, Bob Chapman. Welcome back from break, Bob.
Thank you.
Now, something tells me that there's a huge economic crisis looming, and everybody tries to put out these dates, like it's going to happen this year or next year or whatever. I've got a theory, and I want to run by you. Do you think that they can just reset the system pretty easily, like just forgive all the debt if they wanted? And the whole reason why they're doing this entire crisis and keeping everybody in economic turmoil is just to distract them from other things. So that they can set up the apparatus for world government.
I think it's part and parcel of it, and the reason is the history. You can go back 1,000 years, and you can see them doing the same thing over and over again. And it's really warfare and other things that are the distraction, because they've got financial and economic problems. Take a good example, and that is the United States never came out of the Depression. In 1939 and 40, there was unemployment of 17.2% and then 16.4% in the United States at that time. So they desperately needed a war, and so they had their war.
Do you think
today we have
planning now? Do you think they're planning now World War III then?
Absolutely. It might be a continuation of different wars, such as Iraq, Afghanistan, now Libya, Syria, maybe Bahrain, Aden, and in that process, they put in new people. Those new people are the people who they've been training for years to do this. And there'll be another crop behind them to get rid of the three people they just put in power, whether it's 5 years from now or 55 years from now. And that's the way they play this international game. And in the process, you know, millions and millions of people get killed. But they don't care about that. There's so many people in the world anyway. And they consider them like cattle or monkeys or whatever. And that's their mode of thinking. And that's why they do the things that they do, and that's why they want world government, so they can control everybody. And people don't understand that it's everything. They'll tell you where you can live, where you'll work, where your children will be indoctrinated in government schools, who can breed and who can't. You know, just look at 666. I mean, this regionalization throughout the world, this dream of doing that has been on tap for almost 100 years. And this is nothing new. This is all old stuff. It's just that nobody reads. They don't think. They don't want to. And when they become enslaved through untaxation or inflation or whatever the reason is, it's their own fault.
And
it's happened for centuries.
Now, you're absolutely correct there, and that's the mindset of somebody who won't fight back against the New World Order, who won't stand up, so to speak. They'd rather kneel in chains rather than stand on their feet. And what I find is that it's a harsh reality to come to terms with, and I try to use humor to deal with it. And I was wondering about you, Bob. I mean, what do you use to deal with it? Or is it more just that kind of you've just decided to straddle this problem to the end of your days because basically nothing else is as important?
Well, I think it's a time it's come. And because of communications, the internet, talk radio programs such as this, the word is going out throughout the world. I'm on Free Ireland and the BBC and Deutsche Welle and French International, several mediums in Greece, and I've been on all over the world. There are millions and millions of people that hear me, and people like Alex Jones and Max Kaiser who get the kind of exposure that I do, and we're making a difference, a big difference. And as time goes on, the difference is going to be such that they cannot stop the juggernaut that we're going to create to bring them down.
But that means that they're on the back foot in a corner. And as far as I know, any dangerous animal that is cornered can do a lot of damage.
And they will. They will destroy everything in their path until they're defeated. And defeat for them is long-time incarceration in prison and the removal of their wealth. And for those who have committed treason, they will be executed, or at least they should be.
What do you suppose about the call for amnesty for agents of the New World Order who come out and publicly and try to bring the system out? Whistleblowers of the New World Order, people who have committed crimes, murders, people who are psychopaths who've decided to make a deal with the light side rather than continue serving evil. Should they be given amnesty, or should they simply be used and then betrayed later on and thrown in jail? Because that's I think, what they'd probably deserve.
Well, I, at this point, would say use them. Putting them in jail is a useless thing. Yes, use them. And if it works out fine, that's fine. And they can have their freedom and their ability to live. But you're not going to find many of them. And the reason why is that these people control MI6, the CIA, almost every counterintelligence agency in the world. And they kill people. And so if you're on the other side and you cross over, your life is really not worth 2 cents.
Because you become a real danger to them. And that's what I find very interesting is people come up with these conspiracy theories, Bob, that, you know, if you're in your position or Alex Jones's position, that as long as you're getting enough exposure, therefore you're an agent of Israel.
Yeah. Well, that's laughable. But that's interesting. I've been threatened by the United States government a number of times. And I don't live in the United States. And I probably will never live there again. And fortunately, I'm used to living in other countries and speak other languages. So I don't have the problem that normal people have. And so if they want me, they got to come find me. And that's not going to be easy.
After all, you were trained to be a ghost.
Well, I was trying to be a what?
A ghost. I'm just joking. Bob Chapman,
yeah.
007 here. Like
Shabbos,
you know.
A sacrificial.
Yeah, yeah. And has anything actually really amusing happened to you, Bob? We've kind of run to the end of the line here. And I was wondering, what's the funniest thing that certainly just cracked you up over the last, say, I don't know, year or so of these terrible incidents?
Well, I think the absolute fool that Mr. Bernanke made out of himself before the House committee yesterday, I mean, he's got to be, unless he's out of touch with reality, he's got to be really put out, and so don't all of his compatriots in the Illuminati. And I think that's funny because here's a professor who's caught straight up lying. And that's very, very, very damaging. You know, it happens to the President of the United States all the time. And people, they don't take any exception to that because politicians are a dreadful lot worldwide anyway. And so they expect things like that to come from people like that, but not the professor. And that means that the Federal Reserve, that private corporation that runs the money of the United States and has it enslaved, they run America. They do what they want to do. And we have to stop them from doing that.
Indeed. And thank you so much, Bob, for giving me an hour of your precious time here today. I've certainly learned a few things. And
you would have got more, but this is my seventh program, and I got one more in 2 hours.
I understand. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm on Hillary Ramo's show in 5 minutes' time, so if you want to tune in at HillaryRamo.com, and please, by all means, visit the internationalforecaster.com. Have you got the toll-free number there, Bob? Oh, he's not there, unfortunately. Oh, wait. Give out the toll-free number on the website. We'll see you again sometime later.